Janelle and I have been here a couple of months, so I know that you know us all very well, so I'm going to give a pop quiz. Now, what I've done a lot of the time in the past is we've played Two Truths and a Lie. Have you ever played Two Truths and a Lie? No? That's a lie. Maybe it's true. Who knows? What I'm going to do is I'm going to say three phrases. One of them's not true, and two of them are true. And so as the test is to see if you can pick which one's true and which one's not true. Now, the first one. When Janelle and I were younger, I was the good boy, and Janelle was the more challenging child. Number one. Number two. When I was younger, I was a state rep in sport. Number three. I've never lost my driver's license. Now, one of them is a lie, two of them are true. So the first one, that I was the good boy, Janelle was more challenging, who thinks that's a lie? Okay. The second one, I played state rep in sport, who thinks that's a lie? And the third one, I've never lost my driver's license, who thinks that's a lie? Okay, well, moving on. Okay, so in reality, I was the good boy, and Janelle was a naughty, naughty, naughty girl. I have never lost my driver's license. I know, who would have thought? I got a Ford now, I more likely lose my license in a Holden, I can assure you. And the third one, or the second one, I did not play state rep in sport. I played regional rep and Brisbane rep in hockey, but not state rep. It's amazing, these things. I mean, you know, I set you up. I win. But it's amazing how we know things and we don't know things. And the only reason you know they're true and a lie is because I'm standing here telling you. But there's so many things that we don't know. There's so many questions I have, and I will not know the answer until I get to be in heaven. Like, have you ever considered how Jesus walked on water? You know, we accept that he did, and he did. But you ever try to work out how? Because that would be cool. How did Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego walk into a furnace and not burn up? How did that happen? We know it did, but how do we know it happened? And how did God make this world, everything in it, and everything in it that we don't know about yet? How did he do that? We know he did it by his word, but how did he do it? Wouldn't that be cool to know? And while we're on earth, we won't know. There's probably people who will tell you they know. We don't know. But there's other things that we don't know. Did you know that in a survey in 2012, 24% of people in UK said that Princess Diana was assassinated? In Australia, we have theories about things that happened. Harold Holt, 1967. Harold Holt went swimming, never came back. They believe that he drowned, but there's so many theories about what really happened. And one of the leading ones is that he was a Chinese spy and that the Chinese submarine came and picked him up and he went back to China. It's a legitimate, so many people believe that's absolutely true. And even in Australia, 32% of people believe that Farlap was assassinated or poisoned by the mafia. Yep. So there's all these theories, but how do we know what's true and what's untrue? During COVID, so many theories went around. And being a pastor, I'm not sure, confronted or entertained or challenged about so many of them. I remember Nicki Minaj. You know, you all know Nicki Minaj. I expect you. She's a musician. No, she's not a musician. She does music things. There's a difference, apparently. But she came out and said that her brother's mother, sister's son's father, I don't know who it was, but someone in Trinidad had had the COVID injection and couldn't have children anymore because his man bit swelled up so much and exploded, and so he couldn't have children, and so we shouldn't have the COVID. And that was proved that it wasn't true. And during COVID, my Facebook friends from America had a news article that said, after 200 days of lockdown, the police in Australia are shooting their people with rubber bullets all because they're marching for freedom. The stories that come out and the stories that are held to be true that aren't. Some are, but some aren't. Conspiracy theories, they're all around. Everything is fake news. It's hidden by the farmer. Farmer PH, not farmer as in farmer. The media, the one world government, is perpetuated by the sheeple and the unenlightened. It's really hard to discern what is true and what isn't true and how that affects who we are. And we need to come to that place of understanding what is true. Because for a lot of life, our lives are based on what we believe is true. So we have all these conspiracy theories. So what is a conspiracy theory? It's a theory that the real truth about an event or issue is being concealed and controlled by a powerful group. That there has been a conspiracy to stop people knowing what is really happening. One of the things about conspiracy theory is that it's self-sealed. What that means is that a part of the theory is that it is being covered up and it's being hidden. So a part of a theory is that you can't actually argue about it. You can't discuss it because it's self-sealing, it's hidden, it's a part of the theory itself. So it's really difficult to argue or discuss or work through, because as you argue, it's actually proving that it's true. And conspiracy theories are often contextual. They fit into one place, but they don't actually connect across. They're not global, they're not through everything, but they're specifically for one situation. One question, are conspiracies a modern development? Well, no. Conspiracy theories have been around for ages. Some Christians believed, remember when the bank card came out and there was the BBB, the bank card, and that was 666, and that was the number of the beast in Revelation, and this was the beginning of the tribulation. That's why good Christians have Visa. Do you remember that though? Do you remember backmasking? When Christians would come out and say all Christian rock music is evil because it's all got backmasking. If you run the movie, the record, you know what records are, don't you? Tell me. So when you run a record backwards, you can hear a message coming through and it proves that it's evil and it's satanic. Some Christians believe that the Club of Rome, an alliance of influential leaders, was secretly controlling the world. There's all these theories that have come through our history, and that's our history of saying that these things are happening and it's all hidden. In the early 90s, when the internet first came out, I got a friend who was a pastor that confronted by some of the people in his congregation that had researched on the new internet, the internet about the Bible, and the King James was the only true, real gospel. The NIV that had come out was actually written as a conspiracy. It was written to take down the church, and it was written to bring about the second coming and bring about the tribulation and all that sort of stuff, that the NIV was pure evil. And no matter how much he discussed it, it was just shut off because they knew it was real because it was on the internet. We all know the internet is all true. Facebook is all true. And so they left the church, and that was broken because of their belief. A couple of years ago, I got a phone call from some people during the anti-vax stuff. And I need to read this because it's so complex in my head, okay? So were people calling around churches, asking them where they stood on vaccinations and Noah. And the claim was made that COVID backwards is divok, which means inhabited by an evil spirit. Divok also means divorce, meaning divorcing your God-given genome, like it was the days of Noah when they were marrying, adopting another genome and divorcing the creator. The claim is that in Genesis, the word for generations is the same as genome, and the flood came because humanity was tainted with the blood of angels, and so their genetics was changed. God needed to flood the world to introduce this tainted genetics, and so Jesus was born with pure God-given genetics, and their claim, today's vaccination also altered the genome, and so this is the flood all over again. We might laugh, but these people were serious, and they were wholly believing in this. Wholly believing to where they would ring up pastors and say, this is true, out of real concern of saying, do you know what you're doing? We live in a world that's really hard to understand what is true, what is partially true, what is not true. We need to work out how to understand this. But it hasn't just started recently or somewhat recently. In the Old Testament, in biblical times, Isaiah warned the Israelites that their theories about why the Assyrians were invading and how they could be resisted. In Isaiah 8:22, it says, do not call conspiracy everything this people calls a conspiracy. Do not fear what they fear and do not dread it. In Isaiah, conspiracies have been around since people have been around. We've had conspiracies and conspiracies. Again, we need to work out what's true. Even in the New Testament, we see conspiracies. There were two early heresies in the church that Paul addressed and Peter addressed in the Gospels, in the letters. And the first one was the circumcision party. What they believed is that when people became Christians or followers of Jesus, they need to be circumcised. Now, we look at that as an act of circumcision. But what that really meant was, in order to know Jesus, you firstly had to become a Jew. And in order to become a Jew, you needed to have circumcision and follow all the laws of Judaism to become a good Jew, and then you're allowed to become a follower of Jesus. In Galatians 5:2, Paul writes, mark my words, I, Paul, tell you that if you let yourselves be circumcised, Christ will be of no value to you at all. So Paul came and stood up and said, that is a lie. Remember, he went to Jerusalem and confronted the disciples and said, this is what you're saying, it is a lie. The gospel is about Jesus plus nothing. Jesus plus nothing. And what they were doing was saying, in order to know Jesus, the second heresy in the New Testament was Gnosticism. And Gnosticism was talked about having an extra knowledge. The word gnosis means to know or knowledge. And what people were saying is that we have this knowledge of understanding who God is, understanding what salvation is. And in order to be saved, you need to understand this gnosis, this knowledge. And they went around talking about this knowledge and this understanding, and there were the elite that would go around and say, do you know the gnosis? If you don't know, then are you truly able to be saved? Now, we see this in our day as well. Who remembers the book Da Vinci Code? Dan Brown. 10, 15 years ago, I guess? Everybody was reading it. The movie came out. Everyone watched it. And everyone sort of went, oh, it's possible. Well, is it? Because that was basically a Gnosticism. It's about knowing extra, understanding something hidden. Gnosticism's all about knowing that extra thing. The New Testament talks about Gnosticism regularly in 1 John, in Colossians, in 1 Peter, in Jude, and even in John's Gospel. It's an argument against Gnosticism. It's about not having the extra knowledge, but it's about Jesus plus nothing. What I found interesting is that conspiracy theories are really often welcomed by Christians. If we look around our society, Christians have taken on board conspiracy theories a lot more than our normal society. Why is that? Well, I think there's a lot of reasons. And the first reason is that Christians realize that there's more happening in our world than what we see. Our struggle is not against the powers and principalities, it's about the spiritual powers. We understand in a very, very basic level that we don't see everything that's going on. It's a basic fundamental and foundation of Christianity. We understand that there's stuff we don't see, there's stuff we don't understand. And so we need to discern what are those things that are true and what are those things that are partially true and what are those things that are not true. But as Christians, we're looking for what is behind what is seen. It's part of who we are. So conspiracy theories are quite, we're open to because it's a part of our thinking and understanding. 1 Corinthians 1:18, for it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, the intelligence of the intelligent I will frustrate. Where is the wise person? Where is the teacher of the law? Where is the philosopher of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of this world? For the foolishness of God is wiser than human wisdom. It's a fundamental, it's a foundation of who we are as Christians. Secondly, we live in a broken world where the powerful often seek to abuse the poor. That's a fact. And so we as Christians are to stand up for the oppressed. We're to stand up for those who are treated unjustly. It's our calling. And we look to see how we can help people to stand up against this oppression. It's who we are. So we're trained, it's a part of our calling, that we live in a broken world and to look beyond what's happening to be able to see what's happening behind it. We look at Abwade. And Abwade go and look for how our clothes are made to be able to say, are they made ethically? Who is, where are the powerful oppressing the poor and how can we expose that? That's a calling of Christians. We're to expose that. That's the broken world we live in. Thirdly, many Christians don't live in a place of power. And as we are disempowered in some ways, as we are not of the power, we're suspicious of those who do have power. A part of our desire is to take that power back. So how do we take that power back? By unsettling those who do have power, or to create new power tracks, to be able to look to new ways of finding that power and to be able to have new ways of coming against what our society says. Fourthly, conspiracy theories provide a sense of camaraderie for those who know the inside story. We all need to belong. We all want to belong. It's a human need to belong, to connect. And we all find that way of connecting in different ways. And there are those who find that connection and that support through knowing secrets together, or that camaraderie of conspiracy theories. And fifthly, Christians also tend to believe that they think what they think honours God without feeling the need to check any countering evidence. We have a lot of people who say, God told me. And I'm wary of people who say, God told me. Because yes, that is true that God tells us things. Please don't hear me saying God does not speak. God totally speaks to us. But often God told me is an excuse for saying, this is what I believe. This is what I want to believe, this is what I want to profess, and you can't argue with me because God told me. So when God tells me something, I don't need to back it up because it's true because God told me. So we as Christians have created the back door for people to not have to check things up because God told me I was right. So all of this stuff here, you've seen this. That's not weird to you, is it? As Christians, we are wide open to conspiracy theories. Some would say that Jesus rising from the dead was a conspiracy theory. What do we say? That the Pharisees tried to hide it as a conspiracy theory. foundations of who we are open us as Christians to be like this. Now I'm going to take a sidestep for a little bit. I want to talk about biases. A bias is simply defined as a tendency of a human being to have a positive or negative tendency or inclination. Other words, predilection, inclination, a preference, a prejudgment for or against something. Now, biases can lead to prejudices, and prejudices lead to stereotyping. So we all have biases. You know, you can't say I don't have biases. We all do. We do. What we do with our biases can lead to prejudice. And what we do with our prejudice leads to stereotyping. Now, what's sneaky about biases is they're subliminal and unconscious. We don't decide what biases we have. We understand the world through our biases. So what are our biases and what that looks like? Now, I could give you a list of 20 different types of biases, and I'm not. Do I hear an amen? No, I'm not going to go through, but I do want to have a look at three. And the first one is groupthink bias. Groupthink bias is how do we think as a group? This is what cults look like. This is how we think. Do we think like this? Yes. No. Out. Do we believe David is a wonderfully handsome young man? You can stay. But groupthink, like I'm joking, but groupthink bias is how we all think in the same way. And a cult will be very strongly like this, that the peer monitors how people think and the peers dictate how we all think together. And this limits creativity, it stops creativity, it stops the ability to think beyond what's happening because it's forbidden to. But it's a really good way to control people. I mean, context. It's a really easy way to control people because we control who you think. Now, I'm constantly saying, ask me questions. Talk to me about things that you don't agree with because I hate the thought of groupthink. I hate the thought of having not freedom to explore who you are, to explore who Jesus is. I would not accept that I do not allow anyone to have a conspiracy theory because you don't agree with me. I may not agree with you, but that doesn't mean you're kicked out. See the difference? Groupthink bias. The second bias is an overconfidence bias. An overconfidence bias is someone who believes what they believe is essentially completely true and no one else is true because they know that it is true. Another word that we would use in our community is a smart aleck or a know-it-all. It's someone who is so convinced of everything that they know that you can't even come into that conversation. And this is called an overconfidence bias. The third bias is a confirmation bias. I love confirmation bias because I love it, I hate it, I love it. But I think it's just so important to who we are to understand. Because confirmation bias is where we see things to confirm what we already believe to made true. So I bought a white Ford Ranger. Despite my entire history of hating Fords, I stepped to the dark side, I bought a Ford. Anyway, I bought a Ford Ranger. It was a white one. When I bought it, I thought, I've seen a couple of these, but not that many. When I drive down the road, they're everywhere. And what happens is confirmation bias. Our eyes and our brain are smarter than we think they are. And we take in all of this information, but we don't process most of it because it's not interesting to us. My brain doesn't tell me it's interesting. So I buy a Ford Ranger. And my brain says, oh, I'm interested in Ford Rangers. So then as I'm driving along and as I'm looking, my brain goes, oh, there's one, there's one, oh, that's a blue one, there's one, there's one. And all of a sudden they're everywhere. Confirmation bias. My brain is confirming my bias. We do that all the time when we see something new, when we believe something new. Now here I want to say social media can be pure evil. Because social media is built on the basis of confirmation theory. Facebook, all of these different social medias, and Google has this algorithm that says, if you click on something, if you're interested in something, I'll feed you more of the same. Have you ever done a bit of a Google search for wheels for my trailer? Okay, you may not have. I possibly have. On Facebook, was it Marketplace? And then all of a sudden, I'm getting advertising for wheels and tyres and trailers. You buy a new computer, you look for a computer, and then all of a sudden all this advertising for computers, and you go, I just bought one, why do I need it now? But when we search for something, when we click on something, social media is designed that that's what we're interested in, so it feeds us more and more and more of the same thing. What that means is that if I did a search on the Greens political party, because I'm trying to understand how they think and what their values are, all of a sudden, I'll get all of this information coming about like-minded theories and thoughts. So I'll get all this stuff about the Greens and the environment, and I'll get all this stuff about same-sex, and I'll get all this stuff about anti-Christian. I'll get all this stuff because that must be what I'm interested in because I search for the Greens. So what happens is that when we're on social media and when we're on the computer and we're looking and we're searching and we have an interest in something, our computer understands that's what we're looking for and feeds us more and more and more. So our theories and our understandings of something is reinforced because everybody's saying it, because it doesn't give us a balance. It doesn't help us to understand the big picture. It just confirms and reinforces what we already believe. Now, this is important because hands up if you don't have any biases, and I'm looking. I'm now biased, Rob. We all have biases. We do. It just is. We do. And we are reinforced in our biases constantly. It's how we're made. It's the information we take in. It's what we understand. It's our interests. What we do with our biases is the critical thing. So do we live by our biases and never challenge them? Or do we just accept them? We need to know and understand what is true. What is true? What is mostly true? What is partially true? And what is not true? And when I say true, what is it that we're going to die for? What is it so important that we'll totally die for it? So how do we know what's true? Well, the first thing is, would this conspiracy be possible? If we look at somewhere like Australia and we believe that the government is hiding something, then is that even really possible? With the number of whistleblowers, with the media system we have, with the access of people going behind the backs, with the Julian Assange of this world, can the government truly hide anything? When we have a conspiracy thing, is it really possible that this is happening? The second thing is, how would I know if this conspiracy was untrue or an exaggeration? Rather than asking the question, how is this true, maybe we should ask, how could this not be true? How could this be an exaggeration? How could this be beyond the realms of truth? Because we need to self-analyze our beliefs, not just believe them and reinforce them. Do you understand that difference? So how do we come to that place of working through what might be an exaggeration or what might be untrue? The third thing, where was I? So what do other sources say about this conspiracy? What are they saying about my beliefs? Because what I need to do to firmly believe something is to analyze it through other sources and other beliefs, and to analyze that, to question that. Because if it can be questioned and proved, then it's more likely to be true, isn't it? But if I just accept it and reinforce my own beliefs, that's not so much. The fourth one is, who is benefiting from this theory? Who is benefiting from this? And I just want to throw out, many years ago, the research was all saying that smoking was good for our health. Who's benefiting this? Well, who was doing the research? The cigarette companies were doing the research producing this proof that smoking was healthy. So we need to do our research of who is benefiting from this. I've got a friend whose brother or brother-in-law is really wary of energy. And when I say really wary, he's had his house insulated. He wears hats and jumps to protect himself. He won't have any internet inside the house. He won't go outside the house in a lot of ways because of his fear of 5G. Well, who benefits from this? He spends a lot of money on protection from 5G. Someone's profiting from that. So who's profiting from these series? And when I say profiting, it's not just dollars. It could be through power. It could be through position. It could be through influence. But who's profiting from this series? And the fifth one is, what is the fruit of believing this theory? What is the fruit coming out of it? Jesus always questioned and said, what is the fruit? What are you producing? What's coming out of your beliefs and out of your actions? When we look at James 3, it says that wisdom comes from heaven, is first of all pure, peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere. How does that work? If this theory that we have is actually the opposite of that, or leading us to become something that's not like that, then maybe we should question it. The fifth one is, what difference does this conspiracy make to serving Jesus? Is this going to encourage and empower our connection with Jesus? Is this going to help us in our walk with Christians? Or is this going to separate us? Hebrews 12 says, so don't sit around on your hands, no more dragging your feet. Clear the path for long distance runners so no one will trip and fall, so no one will step in a hole and sprain an ankle. Help each other out and run for it. Work at getting along with each other and with God. Otherwise, you'll never get so much of a glimpse of God. Make sure no one gets left out of God's generosity. Keep a sharp eye out for weeds or bitter discontent. We had a guy come in to do a quote on something in our house one day, and we started to talk to him, and he noticed Jesus things on the wall, because that's where you put Jesus things. And he said, oh, you guys are Christian. Oh, yeah, blah, blah, blah. And so he started telling us his story. Well, his story was, he's a part of a church, but he didn't agree with what was going in the church because of all this other stuff that was going on. But then he got a group of friends, and so they've created this home group that looks at these different beliefs and understandings that he has. And I'm sitting there, and Janelle and I are getting super uncomfortable, really disconnected. And I'm sitting there going, I just want to get out of here. And as I'm thinking this, I went, three Christians in a room. Should we be wanting to get out of here, or should we want to connect more? Because what he was saying was creating such a difficult, awkward space, because there was no discussion. It was, this is true. This is what you should believe. We were being judged, accused, and separated. And I went, but if we're Christians, shouldn't we be walking together? And if your theories are doing this to you, in, it would seem, most of his life, then is that really a healthy thing? Is that a godly thing? The question I have for us, are our beliefs driving barriers between us as believers? Are our beliefs driving us away from our community, our church, and our friends? Are our beliefs driving a barrier between us and our calling? Are our beliefs driving a barrier between us and God? I said something before. Jesus plus nothing. Philippians 3. But whatever were gains to me, I now consider loss for the sake of the gospel. What is more, I consider everything a loss because of the surpassing worth of knowing Jesus Christ my Lord, for whose sake I have lost all things. I consider them garbage, that I may gain Christ and be found in him, not having a righteousness of my own that comes from the law, but that which is through faith in Jesus, the righteousness that comes from God on the basis of faith. There's a story. I just want to sort of close with this story. And it's not a true story. Just get that out there. But old mate goes up and he's standing at the front gate of heaven. And Jesus said, we have a new policy. To get in, you need 1,000 points. And he's like, oh, that won't be too hard. He says, well, what would get you points? He says, well, I grew up in a Christian home. I was a Christian as a kid. I read my Bible. I've given money to the poor. I've helped those who are in need. I've been to church all of my life. I pray regularly. My kids, I have 3 kids, and the first one's a pastor, and the second one, my daughter, is married to a missionary, and they're overseas. And I've been a bank manager, but in what I've done is try to help people in financial need in the inner city where they're out of place. So I've done all I could. I've done everything I can to be like Jesus. And Jesus says, excellent, that's 1 point. What else have you got? And he says, oh, Jesus, have mercy. He says, and that's your other 999 points, welcome. It's about grace. It's about mercy. We're asked to love Jesus plus nothing. All this other stuff, it's not from God. Do we get it? Do we get it? All this other stuff is okay. All this stuff is important. We need to understand the world. But Jesus plus nothing. I'm finishing on Proverbs 3. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, submit to him, and he will make your paths straight. Let's pray. Father God, you are an amazing God. We make it so hard, but you keep it so simple. We put all these difficult things in the way, but you just say, come and walk in my love, walk in grace, walk in mercy. Father, I ask you give us wisdom. Wisdom to know what is true, what is right, what is good. Help us to know how to be more like Jesus in our conversations, in our thinking, in who we are as people, in how we interact with others and how we love others and how we serve others and how we care for others. Father, teach us to be more like you and give us a wisdom that can only come from you. And Father, I ask that you give us a clear mind to understand who you are and what you're doing in our lives, to not just follow the stream of our community, but to stand up for where you are and what you believe, but not to be deceived at the same time into believing the things that aren't from you. Give us a wisdom. Give us an understanding, and Father, most of all, give us a love for each other, that we can walk with each other, to care for each other, to forgive each other, and Father, to be gracious with each other. Help us to analyze our actions and our thoughts, and help us to give everything to you. Jesus plus nothing. Amen.